Okay. The next argued case is number 1974, Veterans of Foreign Wars against the Secretary of Veterans Affairs, Mr. Ridgway.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is James Ridgway, and I represent the petitioners, Veterans of Foreign Wars of the United States. VFW seeks restoration of the 48-hour rule that was unlawfully rescinded by VA without notice and comment. This case is governed squarely by Purple Heart, and no new precedent is needed to reach this conclusion. 3 points lead us directly there. First, as a matter of fact, this case is of the exact same type that Purple Heart said requires notice and comment. Second, the government's argument that a right has to be traceable to the text of a regulation is demonstrably incorrect. And finally, the cases relied upon by the government are easily distinguished. Beginning with Purple Heart itself, as a factual matter, Purple Heart explained that notice and comment is required for changes that exclude the veteran from participating in the processing of their claim.
What procedural right is being taken away by this removal of the 48-hour rule?
So you can begin with a regulation and say 3.103A guarantees the right of representation. And then you can look to this court's
explanation. Well, maybe I should be narrower. What specifically would a veteran filing a case now not be able to do that they could have done before because of the rule?
When we look at the rule, previously representatives were required to receive notice when a draft decision had been prepared, which was effectively notice that development was complete, have the opportunity to...
Not all representatives, right?
No, VSO representatives.
Right, but not other attorney representatives. So they were treated differently.
They were treated differently.
So veterans who had representation other than that were not given the benefit of the 48-hour rule.
They were not. And so, as Purple Heart says, this is not a question of whether or not a change would be arbitrary and capricious and might be permissible if done appropriately. The question here is whether notice and comment was required. And VA simply did not follow the requirements to make this change, regardless of whether or not it could have been justified if we were reviewing it as a matter of substance.
Do you have any evidence that the 48-hour rule has a substantive impact on the outcomes for the veterans?
So this is not a rule that either party has ever gathered data on. The fact that VA did this unilaterally without notice deprived the VSOs of the opportunity to develop that and make their case. Obviously, data is very good in many situations, and it helps to prove that processes are effective, but other processes are effective precisely because changes can be made without anybody having to lose face over making those changes. As a practical matter, VFW has operated this way for decades and has hundreds of employees at every RO in the country that have done this work. If an organization of veterans that did this work every day as their core mission noticed it was not helping, then it would have changed how it conducts its practice.
I mean, some of the practicality that we can maybe take a little judicial notice of is this rule was initially in effect like in 1957.
Yes, Your Honor.
Before we had computers, before we had all this digital access. The way the court handles its filings and et cetera has changed enormously, all to the benefit, I think, of the parties in terms of transparency with the advent of all this computer stuff. So the process is different now. Now everything is digitally available. There's digital access. I mean, is the removal of this rule meaning that the veteran can't get adequate representation in a way he or she could do under the 48-hour rule?
Well, this is not a constitutional due process claim. Whether this process would be adequate under the Constitution without this rule is not the question. The question is this a substantive rule? And computers are wonderful, but they also allow people to make errors much more efficiently, which is what we see.
So what's the test under Purple Heart? What's the test for making it, how we decide whether or not it's substantive or not? You say it's
so. The language of Purple Heart at 1297 is that change removed, quote, the opportunity to respond to the concerns of the deciding official. The text of the M21 clearly requires the VA to provide a copy of the draft rating decision, which is how the adjudicator thinks about the decision, and then receive comments and questions and concerns from the VSO, and then step six of the process, as set forth on Appendix 70, is to resolve any mistakes noted or clarifications requested by the VSO.
Aren't there other ways to respond, though, separate and apart from this 48-hour rule? Aren't there other opportunities?
There would be, and that could go to whether it was arbitrary and capricious to remove this, but this is an effective process. So going back to the issue of computers and the role that they play. So to put yourself in the seat of an RVSR who adjudicates a claim, you're one of thousands who have to deal with 1.3 million applications that have five or six benefits per application. So, and your work standard may give you 30 minutes. You go into VBMS, you have a list of documents, and you have to choose which of those to open before you make a decision. And there's a fair chance that one of them is going to be misdated or mislabeled, and you're going to overlook something. I mean, the benefit of this rule is that the vast majority of mistakes that we see as a representative, and I say this from two decades of experience, is just overlooking material because it's not easy to find. I would love a computer system that made the relevant information right there in front of you. But for example, correspondence in the VBMS system could be a form letter that VA sent out, or it could be a letter that the veteran sent in. And so the 48-hour rule works when a claim is denied for no diagnosis, and the VSO can say, no, this correspondence thing in VBMS, you should have opened it up and looked because that was the veteran sending in his medical records. It should have been labeled as a medical treatment. It wasn't, so you didn't open it up.
All of this stuff under any circumstance happens before. I mean, the veteran could get a hearing. There's no final decision that goes into effect that doesn't get the opportunity for review beforehand, right?
Again, yes. There are other opportunities.
Okay.
And again, this is not a claim that the process would be constitutionally inadequate without it. It's not a claim that the VA has no justifications whatsoever if it wanted to potentially make changes. But as the VSOs wrote in their letter to VA in the appendix, you know, this decision was made without consulting the VSO partners. This is Appendix 83. And they requested that this be immediately suspended so that to allow for a more robust discussion. As the Supreme Court said in Chrysler Corporation, notice and comment assures fairness and a mature consideration of rules of general application. And that's what the VSOs want here. They want VA to engage in the notice and comment process. Yes, the world is modernized, and maybe the result is not exactly what we have today, but notice and comment is not a binary process. It's a political process. It leads to compromise. It leads to innovation. And baselines matter. If the baseline is VA gets to turn this off, then it has no incentive to engage with the VSOs about how the business should be updated. However, this, you know, as the government's own case law, they cite GEM Broadcasting, and GEM Broadcasting itself cites to Air Transportation of America as something on the other side of the line. And it says that the rules for adjudicating civil actions between a citizen and a government, quote, encode substantive value judgments about rights versus efficiency. The decision to turn off the 48-hour rule is a substantive value judgment about rights versus efficiency. That makes it substantive and requires notice and comment. Where that notice and comment goes, you know, that remains to be seen. But this is governed squarely by Purple Heart because it is a change that excludes the veteran from participating in the processing of their claim. Getting notice, having the opportunity to respond, and having the written rule say that VA must respond to your comments by making changes or clarifications, that is a formal processing requirement. That makes it substantive and requires notice and comment to change.
Isn't this just a procedural rule?
So this isn't just a procedural rule because it guarantees a fundamental due process back and forth between the adjudicator and the representative. It requires the government to state a reason for taking an action and to respond to the individual citizen's concerns and arguments about why that action is incorrect.
But that's all, that's inherent, that's going to happen in this case, whether it happens in that cavern or in another cavern. There's no question before the final written decision is issued, all these opportunities exist for the veteran.
And there, again, there's not an argument here that the process would be constitutionally inadequate without it. The question before the court is, what is the nature of this rule? NOVA 2020 makes clear that things in the M21 are rules, and if they are substantive in nature, then notice and comment applies. And so the only question is does this count as substantive when you look at its nature? And its nature, just like in Purple Heart, was to give the person the opportunity to make their case and have the VA deciding official respond. So it is the exact same type of back and forth. And so
that still exists. That's not taken away by the removal of the 48-hour rule. I know we're going in circles.
Yeah. But the 48-hour rule is explicit. I mean, it says, and on page 68, the purpose of the review is to, quote, identify any clear errors or matters of clarification that require significant discussion and or correction prior. And the rule itself italicizes prior. And, you know, that's not emphasis we added. That's emphasis in the rule itself, prior to promulgation. This takes away that back and forth prior to promulgation, which is explicitly the purpose of the rule, and therefore it's a substantive change.
Is Purple Heart distinguishable because it really took away any way to be heard?
No, you're right. I mean, the same arguments would apply. It took away one opportunity to be heard, but the government's position was essentially the same. Well, you can still appeal, you can still seek, you know, other types of review, and therefore the fact that you don't get to interact with the person who's actually at VBA deciding your claim doesn't mean the process was inadequate. And again, the response in Purple Heart was, you may be justified, you may have the authority to do this, but the question before us is this substantive? And if it is substantive, notice and comment was required to do it. Therefore, it has to be undone, and you're free to try again if you do it properly.
So if this rule's not there, what would you do? Would you request a hearing? What would be the thing that would be done?
So, you know, we have the remaining remedy, so it's the system that we had before minus this step. And so we still have the opportunity under the Appeals Modernization Act to seek higher level review, to submit a supplemental claim, to go to the board, but, you know.
To have a hearing. You're allowed to request a hearing.
I mean, those things still exist, but the experience of VFW is this is a highly effective tool because there are so many mistakes that involve just overlooking the fact that a veteran had travel orders from Japan to Vietnam, and therefore this should be granted as presumptively. And if the veteran files an appeal to the board, it's going to take 3 years.
Can I ask you, the elephant in the room for me here is kind of a different issue, which is, if it's so important and so compelling that the veteran have this right, then how can you get away with having it only with your representation and not for veterans who have others representing them? They've never had that right.
They have never had that right. That is something that could reasonably be part of the political process of discussing what should replace it. But I would argue that the result of that process could just as easily be attorney representatives get the same right. So, like, since briefing was completed in this case, Tom Murphy came to the National Organization of Veterans Advocates, the acting undersecretary, and says, we want to pilot electronic notification of decisions because the mailing and printing business is super expensive and we want to save that money. And he wanted attorneys. He's like, we're going to give you electronic access. We've created organizational codes so attorneys can get notifications like VSO organizations. They're already moving the computer systems in the direction of making this possible. And so it's very easy to see that the net result of the process could be, yeah, we extend this to attorneys because the system has evolved in a way that it is not a significant technological hurdle for them to have the exact same rights as a VSO representative. But that should be something decided by the stakeholders, including the agency, during the notice and comment political process, which is exactly what the APA is designed to encourage and enforce. To have, as the Supreme Court said, you know, fairness and mature consideration of what is the best route, not what happened here, which is a unilateral announcement without consultation of the stakeholders, that we're just turning off the core function of your business model and taking your folks that used to do all of this work and saying, you have nothing, you've got to repurpose them because we've taken away the job that they had before of looking for documents that were overlooked that result in quick and easy wins for the veteran in less than 48 hours and saying, well, you can do higher-level appeals that take months or board appeals that take years. Well, veterans are denied health care because they don't have the service-connected rating that gives them access to the system, and they're denied the benefits that would start to flow if an error is corrected within 48 hours because somebody who's talked to the veteran has actually opened the documents in VBMS, seen what is there, and has more than whatever the 18 or 20 minutes of the standard to actually look and see if the evidence supports the grant of a claim.
Okay. Let's hear from the VA, and we'll save you a rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you. May it please the Court. I'd like to respond first to a few of the questions that were posed earlier. There was a question about, at this point, once this rule has been rescinded, what the veteran can do. So the 48-hour rule is really designed to deal with these what were called clear errors. And so there's this 48-hour period where the VSOs can identify a so-called clear error to the regional office adjudicator. So under the new system, there's two separate paths that a VSO can take now. So they can go, and once they get the decision, if there is a clear error identified, they can go and seek a higher level review and go through that process. And that's a process that's, you know, generally supposed to be more expedited than the normal appeal process. We've also pointed out in our brief, and this is on page 11 and footnote 7, that there's actually a pilot program that is applies to both VSOs as well as attorney representatives. So when, again, when there's a clear error, they can go through this pilot program, and the pilot program is designed to adjudicate those errors within 30 days. And so in terms of what this rule is, sort of the only sort of potential harm that can be identified here would be, one, whether or not a clear error will be resolved. There's two paths to seek that resolution. The other potential harm that's been identified was, well, is this going to take a very long time? And so here what we have is we have the higher level review process, which is supposed to be more expedited. So those numbers are posted on the VA website. I mean, even if you just take, you know, the last numbers that were posted, which I think were for October 2021, it's about 45 days to resolve those higher level, you know, the higher level reviews that are going up to the adjudicators. And so there's certainly process in place here. And so when there was the question, well, what's sort of the evidence of any sort of substantive effect here? I mean, one, there is no evidence there. Certainly this part of the problem with the 48-hour rule was that it wasn't tracked. You know, the data wasn't collected. It was a much more of an informal process. So with this pilot program, they're actually taking that process and building it more into the higher level review process, and they're tracking, you know, sort of tracking the clear errors, tracking the adjudication. But in terms of the core issue here, the core issue is this a procedural rule? It's clearly procedural on its face. And sort of the only exceptions, if you look at, for example, the DC Circuit precedent we cited, where you could get it to be a substantive rule, the D.C. Circuit uses this term sufficiently grave effect on individual rights. And so here, as I just pointed out, there's really no demonstrative effect on any of the rights we're talking about. If we're talking about timing, there's been no showing of that. There's no evidence of that. If we just talk about opportunity to get it right, to get that clear error taken care of, there's processes in place for that. So we think that there's really no way to show that this is anything other than a procedural rule. And under 553, Congress has set forth this framework that procedural rules do not have to go through notice and comment rulemaking. And that makes sense because the agency is in the best position to determine what's the most efficient process to go through. The Purple Heart decision came up, and that was just, you know, we think that can be distinguished on the facts of that case. So that involved a decision, that involved a rule where certain claims above a certain dollar value, I think it was $250,000, were basically going to be going to headquarters for a decision. But the veteran had no knowledge of that. And so there could be a situation where the regional office adjudicator grants the claim. It goes, because of this process, I think the second part of that rule deemed it to be a draft decision, that goes up to the headquarters, and they deny it, and the veteran would be unaware of that process. And the veteran didn't have the ability, when we're talking about process, to go and to engage with headquarters. And so we don't have that here. As Judge Prost pointed out, there's certainly an opportunity for a hearing before the regional office adjudicator. Even if you go, if you take the path with a higher level review, you're able to, engage in an informal conference with that individual. And so we think that Purple Heart is really just a different factual situation where they're sort of taking away, really core sort of rights, core procedural rights there. And the other thing, when you look at the Purple Heart decision itself, what we're talking about here is a specific exemption for 553. And there's very little discussion at all in that case about the procedural exception. And that's why we pointed to these D.C. Circuit cases, because they actually articulate what, sort of the rationale of the procedural exception and what qualifies as a procedural rule versus a substantive rule. In fact, in Purple Heart, a lot of the discussion was an argument as to whether or not this was a rule under the APA or not. And so we think, when you sort of look at the effect, even if you sort of look at the effect here, it doesn't transform it, a procedural rule into a substantive rule. And so we think, based upon that and based upon the cases that we have cited, that the agency did not need to go through notice and comment rulemaking under 553. And if there's no further questions, we'd ask that the court deny the petition.
Okay. Thank you. Counsel, have your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just to respond to some of the specific points made by the government. First, the government argued that the 48-hour rule was designed to deal with clear errors, and that is exactly right. And that is what it has been effective doing, which is why VFW has so many staff that have worked that process in the past and want it to continue so that veterans' benefits are not delayed. Fundamentally, the government came up and said there are justifications for why we made this change. But this is not a question of justification. If the government can come up and say, well, there's no prejudice because our rule is good, then what's the point of notice and comment? Notice and comment exists to allow the stakeholders and the political process to evaluate the change. It's not supposed to allow the government to come to the court in the first instance and say, you evaluate whether this was right or wrong in the first instance. The whole point of the APA is to have the process work and then the record made before the determination is made. To the extent the government argues, well, this wasn't tracked, this is the epitome of unclean hands. If the government wanted to find out that this wasn't working before deciding to eliminate it, it could have tracked it in VBMS. It's already tracking the notifications to the VSOs, and it's tracking the decisions that ultimately come out. Why is it before you saying, oh, we don't have any data, when it was in the position to know that a decision was coming and also to gather data in order to support a record that might show that this wasn't an arbitrary and capricious action? But this isn't a question of arbitrary and capriciousness. This is a question of whether or not this was a substantive rule. The government's justification for distinguishing Purple Heart that, oh, this wasn't done in secret, the APA doesn't say anything about secret rules are subject to notice and comment. It says that substantive rules are subject to notice and comment, whether they're changes made in secret or done out in the open as a fait accompli like it was done here. It is the nature of the change that matters. This was a change that is a substantive change because, as the courts have recognized, it's a question of degree. At some point, procedure has such a significant impact on the outcomes of cases that it is substantive. It affects individual rights, as this court said in PVA v. West. and again in Coalition for Common Sense. So I already talked about GEM broadcasting and how clearly it says litigation with a citizen encodes value judgments about efficiency versus rights. And then when we look to James Herson Associates, that was a case where it was a purely ministerial rule about the delivery of documents that had an incidental effect of giving the person the opportunity to make their case. And so this is not a case where it's incidental that the veteran had a right to know that a decision was being made and the opportunity to change the mind of the decision maker before it was finalized. This is exactly the type of thing that is substantive, because it is exactly as Purple Heart said, a change that excludes the veteran from participating in the processing of their claim by denying them the opportunity to respond to the concerns of the deciding official. Like, whatever this precise facts of Purple Heart is, the analysis is directly applicable to exactly what happened here, which is why VFW believes that you should grant the petition, restore the 48-hour rule, and allow VFW to continue its 102-year tradition of helping veterans receive the benefits that they earned in a timely manner so that they can have access to the support and health care that they need. There's no further questions? Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. Case is submitted.